Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them.
Pop.
I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Morning.
April Fool's Day.
Indeed.
Yeah, we're recording a bit early today because we're both off to the big Vodacom rebrand and relaunch this afternoon in Sandton. So we thought let's get the podcast out of the way this morning rather than this afternoon. But we'll talk a bit more about that later in the show. But yeah, April Fool's Day today. Hope we caught at least a few of you with our story on the site this morning about government's plans to ban cell phones to children under 16 and to pregnant women. A couple of people were caught out.
That was days worth of brainstorming for a good one.
But yeah, it's always fun at this time of year. Last year we quoted Julius Malema saying that they wanted to nationalise the CECOM cable, which also caught quite a few people out, got them quite het up. But it's always fun at this time of year to do that. And there actually have been quite a few local sites and newspapers running some really good jokes, I thought, this year.
My favourite was definitely Daily Mavericks.
I was about to say the Daily Maverick buying a VUSA for 12 billion rand. So that was a good one.
It was fun.
Probably got the executives at Avusa to set up a section notice. But there have been quite a few good ones, actually. I quite enjoyed one of the Guardian ones, which said that the Guardian was going Twitter only, suspending their print edition and only publishing their stories through Twitter, 340
nice.
Character updates.
Nice one.
And the other one, which we watched a video for, in fact, we'll put the video with the podcast this week, is from Google, their new product, Gmail Motion, which will allow you to control your email through hand gestures and body motion and stuff, which is really funny. But we'll link to that YouTube video with this podcast, so you can check it out as well.
Definitely worth watching.
But yeah, so we actually, Candace and I were just saying before the show, it's three big events happening today. It's April Fool's Day. It's also Paint the Town Red Day, courtesy of Vodacom and their big rebranding exercise. I think a bit of Vodacom's, we've taken a bit of the wind out of Vodacom sails on that one with the stories on and sightings of the new logo around town. We ran a story earlier this week showing their new Vodacom store, used to be called the Vodashop at Four Ways Mall, revealing their new branding. And I saw Aki Anastasiou from 702 tweeted yesterday a picture of the new Vodafone or Vodacom branding outside Vodaworld in Madrid.
We should also be getting some pictures of the new branding on Ponte, which is
yeah, I believe
up.
It's up. I yes. believe it's up. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Although someone mailed us this morning to say that apparently it's not, it doesn't have flashing lights on it like the previous version. Maybe they've still got to add that.
Well, maybe they're trying to save electricity. You know, there is a lot of strain on Eskom and all that.
Or maybe they're just being a bit more conservative now that they're above
it. It's quite possible.
And the other big event today, which we probably won't go into any detail on this podcast since it is a family show, is I was alerted this morning that it's also National Cleavage Day. So, but we probably shouldn't go there.
Ugh, no luck on that front in this office, I'm afraid.
Anyway, let's get a bit serious then. Chat about Roy Padiachi and speech. Actually, it's not that serious. A speech that Roy Padiachi gave at a multi-stakeholder forum, which the Department of Communications hosted yesterday and the day before yesterday.
What, today, yesterday and today?
Oh, yesterday and today. Okay,
yes,
Thursday,
yes.
Friday. Now, we missed Padiachi's speech because we had other commitments to attend to, but we got a copy of it from the Department of Communications, Candace. And let's just say Roy Padiachi is quite ambitious in his job creation, or his belief in the ICT sector to create create jobs.
To be fair, I think it was just a typo, but
So a speechwriter clearly made a mistake. But to give you some insight here, he believes that 24 million jobs can be created through DTT, digital terrestrial television set-top manufacturing, and he believes that 150 million jobs can be created in the ICT sector overall. Now, of course, South Africa's population is only about 48 million, so it's going to be quite interesting to see if he manages to create policies that produce 150 million jobs.
Three times the population.
Yes. Maybe he knows something we don't. Maybe the rest of Africa is going to come down and live here in South Africa and we're going to give them all jobs. But you clarified it with the Department of Communications, and it was 1.5 million jobs that he felt the sector could create.
Yeah, so we're still trying to clarify that the 24 million in DTT, hopefully they'll come back with an answer on that.
1.5 million jobs, I think, is too ambitious anyway. But more realistic than creating 150 million jobs in a country with 48 million people.
Maybe the joke's on us. It is April Fool's after all.
True. Well, did he deliver the speech today or yesterday?
He was supposed to have delivered the speech yesterday, but the way things were going yesterday, I'm not sure he made it to the podium.
Okay, so he might have delivered this morning, in which case, yes, indeed. But 150 million jobs, he'd go down in history as something.
Definitely impressive.
Yes. Anyway, now getting a bit more serious, let's talk a bit about the Director General position. He had indicated last year that he wanted a new Director General, a permanent Director General in place at the department by the end of March. That clearly hasn't happened now that it's the 1st of April. But Candice, you spoke to the Minister yesterday.
Yes, I did.
At the multi-stakeholder forum, and he gave you some insights into what's happening around this appointment of a permanent DG. Of course, the position, just to recap, has been held by Harold Wesso in an acting capacity since Mamadupi Motlala left last year. She's now heading up the National Consumer Commission.
Yes.
There was a big falling out, if you remember, between the former minister, Sipiwe Nyanda, and Mamadupi Motlala, which resulted in her leaving the department, first being fired, then being reinstated, and then leaving.
And also him moving on to the presidency.
Yes, after apparently being offered the job of ambassador to Germany and turning that down. So you spoke to the minister yesterday and he gave you some indication of how the process is going regarding appointing a new DG. Give us an update on that.
Well, he wouldn't reveal any details around the speculation that we heard this week in terms of the possible appointment of... his name slips my mind now.
Well, there's two names. The one is the deputy, current deputy director general, Rosie Sekese. And the other name, which I've heard, is the current Vodacom regulatory executive by the name of Phakamile Pongwana. Phakamile was a former deputy director general under Andile Ngcaba, who was director general at the time and is now chairman of Dimension Data South Africa. Phakamile Pongwana was actually acting DG for a while after Andile left the Department of Communications. Everything we're hearing is pointing to him being a front runner for the position. I spoke to Phakamile and he said he just didn't want to comment. You spoke to the minister and he said they've interviewed 39 candidates?
39 candidates, some from internal and some external. And the minister says there are some very credible possibilities for the position. Obviously, that position now has to get ratified through the correct channels. But he's hoping that he will have a full announcement for industry by the end of the month, at the very latest, at the end of this month. He says he hopes that...
end of April?
Yes. He hopes that by his birthday he will have a DG.
Which is when?
The 1st of May.
Oh, right. Okay. 39 people. I mean, that seems like a ludicrous number of people to interview. Has the Department of Communications not heard of a shortlist?
I may have got it wrong. He may have looked at the 39 applications and then only interviewed a few of those people. But
okay.
From what I understood, they have interviewed 39 people, 39 candidates.
Okay.
It's quite interesting to see that they're looking so extensively for someone to fill that position. And hopefully that position gets filled soon. It's a very important position. And it's going to be important to drive competition in the telecom sector, specifically looking at some of the policy implementations that they need to make this year.
Okay.
Hopefully that will happen soon.
Okay. So Candice, I had a really interesting interview this week with a guy called Etienne Labuschagne from a company called Spycatcher. You can check out the story on Tech Central under the headline Spy versus Spy in Corporate South Africa. Really interesting company. They really play in the corporate espionage market, providing these James Bond type gadgets to companies and to individuals who want to spy on other companies or even sell stuff to wives who want to spy on their husbands and this sort of thing.
I hope you didn't bring any of that stuff back to the office.
I didn't. I would have loved to, actually. Some of the toys they had were really cool. But, ethically, some of the stuff is pretty borderline, although Etienne Labuschagne says, we just supply the products. What do you do with it? And you need to consult with your lawyer if you think you're going to be breaking the law and doing this sort of stuff. I did come away from the meeting a little sort of concerned about some statements that he made saying that this sort of technology is and this sort of corporate espionage is quite widespread in corporate South Africa. The geek side of me really loved the little gadgets that he sells. Some of them they're pretty cheap. They're not exorbitant. Anybody can really go along and buy this technology and spy. It's got little devices like tiny little cameras that you can hide inside walls and inside screws and inside speaker cabinets and all this sort of thing. He demonstrated a watch with a built-in camera. There was an iPod Shuffle with a built-in HD camera.
Yeah, I saw that one in the pics that you took.
Yes, completely inobtrusive. I mean, you would never notice it there. But he's just got this amazing panoply of cool gadgets, James Bond type gadgets, which you can use to spy on people, really. there's a USB stick, for example, that you don't even have to plug into a computer because it's got a built-in. It's got a little built-in battery, and it records onto the memory inside the stick. So you literally put that on the desk, and it records a conversation. He's got systems where you can use radio frequency to broadcast an audio conversation from inside a building. So with even through walls across 500 meters, you just sit outside with the little receiver and you can listen into a conversation. They even have systems where you can. He showed me a system that they designed. It's a power extender, a multi-adapter, which has got a SIM card in it. And all you have to do is dial the SIM card inside the... And it's charged. So, it's not as if it's going to run out of battery. You literally plug it into a wall socket, plug a computer or whatever you need into it, hide it behind a desk, and you call this, and then it activates the SIM card and then makes a call over the GSM net. So there's a call over the GSM network, and you can just simply listen in whenever you want to a conversation happening in an office or wherever you happen to put this device. Quite amazing. And he said a lot of companies, if they're doing deals, if they're looking to make an acquisition or something, they'll actually put this technology into the companies to listen into what the company's saying about what they're saying about each other. They spy on each other. It's absolutely amazing. It's
terrifying.
It's ethically massively dubious in my view, but the tech is really, really awesome. And they do all sorts of other stuff. They do body armor, and they do night vision goggles, which are really cool. I really want a pair of those.
You can. We've got a park here across the road from us at the office, and if at night anything goes wrong out there, you could probably
absolutely
plonk on your goggles and see what's out there.
For sure. But he was showing me that they've got different levels of or grades of night vision goggles, and certain ones are only allowed to be sold to the military or to government. And I tried out a pair of those. It was pretty cool. So it's literally like playing a video game. You put these things on and the whole world goes green and you can just see all sorts of cool stuff.
Cool.
Very interesting company. Spycatcher, they were always checking out. Go check out the article. Scary stuff, but... It's definitely
one for the geeks.
It's both scary, but I totally geeked out in my interview with this guy. Really cool stuff. Anyway, let's get on to a bit of telecoms. Centec is rolling out a national broadband network, as we've reported before. But Candice, you've got some more insight into, some more detail into that. They're going to be spending over 800 million rand over the next couple of years deploying this network. Tell us a bit more about what they're planning to do.
Well, basically, they're planning to spend 800 million over 3 years, or the medium term, to roll out broadband to schools, clinics, and possibly the Tusong centers, and maybe even to other municipal services, so government services. So the idea is to bring to bring broadband to areas that are underserviced and not serviced by the commercial guys. And in the document that I received with the financial figures, the basic idea that Centec has is that the market has failed the underserviced areas and have not brought the connectivity that they need to the kinds of people that need it. For example, the schools. And so many of the schools in specifically KwaZulu-Natal, which has a very high ratio, a very low access to connectivity at schools, and that's a problem. You know, South Africa has to move into the information age, and if our kids, our children, are not giving access to these technologies, how are they expected to compete? Firstly, at varsity, and then in the global community. So I think that's the idea behind this. The actual plan looks exceptionally well structured. They even have revenue figures pinpointed for. Not this year, next year, the year after, and then again in 2014. So,
No, Candace, I have to admit that I'm very skeptical about all of this.
Obviously.
Given the complete screw-up that was the My Wireless project, which was the predecessor system to this. Now, they're talking about doing this differently. They're talking about creating a wholesale open access network and specifically targeting rural areas. But still, should we trust this organization, which came to market 5 years ago with the My Wireless project, My Wireless Broadband project, and screwed it up? They were really completely... they have their hands full rolling out digital, the migration from analog to digital terrestrial television. Do we really want Centec to be overstretching itself with this sort of project and spending taxpayers' money to build a network?
That's, I'm afraid, a question that will be answered in time, whether or not they succeeded this. But to be fair, they have new executive in place. They have a new minister as a governing hand who seems to be particularly competent. Aside from having gross targets for job creation. but at the same time, I agree with you. I think we have to be skeptical. We have to question every step of this project.
Yes.
We have to make sure that every cent that is spent is accounted for. Every tender that is put out is done transparently. We have to keep we as the media have to keep our finger on this pulse, and we have to be strong and hard with Centec. Mm. But I do believe that under the new executive, they have a new vision, they have a new ideal, and they have skills that other companies don't have. What they really have now is a better plan than the original plan that they had. They're not going to compete in retail. They can't. It's not government's place to compete in retail. And I think they understand that. If they could bring... And to be fair, the commercial operators have failed the underserviced areas, including Telkom, who should have been providing access to schools, who should have been providing access to... I mean, even the commercial companies that were tendered into providing access to schools haven't done the job.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day... someone has to do it.
But instead of taxpayers paying for it, why doesn't Centec make use of the Universal Service Fund, which is there, which has been contributed towards by the commercial operators over a period of many years?
It appears that they are pitching for it.
It makes more sense to do it that way than for taxpayers once again to have to stump up the cash to do this project. I mean, there's this huge amount of money. No one knows exactly how much. It's somewhere over R1 billion sitting in the Universal Service Fund. Centec says it needs 800 million rand for the rollout project. It seems logical, if Centec can prove the business case, to give the money to Centec to roll out this network. Because I think both of us agree, and I think most people will agree, that it's laudable to want to roll out internet connectivity into rural areas and underserviced areas because of the economic spin-off of it. But I'm not convinced that taking taxpayers' money and giving it to a company that has failed once before at building a wireless broadband network is the right approach.
Well, it's a fair assessment, and I think that the Universal Service Access Fund would be an ideal point of cash generate or finding the debt that they need to fund this project.
But even then, the question that has to be asked is Centec the right vehicle for doing this? Perhaps that Universal Service Fund money should be given to the likes of Vodacom and MTN and Telkom to provide services in the rural areas.
And how is this going to be in competition with InfraCo is the other question we need answered.
Yes.
Because InfraCo's mandate is to provide wholesale access.
Yes.
So why isn't InfraCo being involved in this? There has been talk that InfraCo and Centec are in discussions in terms of how to partner. The problem, another thing that's not been met well by analysts. So.
The problem with Infraco and Ascentec is that they've got different ministers reporting. Well, they report to different ministers. Well,
yes.
Infraco reports to the Department of Public Enterprises and Ascentec reports to the Department of Communications. It makes sense for both companies to report to the same minister, and I'd argue then that the two companies should simply be merged into one.
I would agree with you. The question is it possible? And you know, what do they do once they merge? Do they then go back to the drawing board and you know, work out where, because at this point Infraco has infrastructure in areas that Ascentec hasn't got infrastructure and vice versa. And I think the project will need to be somehow integrated.
Mm.
And that's not an easy task. And I think what Ascentec wants to do is get this out within 3 years.
Yeah, that seems ambitious as well.
It does.
Just as I think the DTT, the Digital Terrestrial Television Project, is too ambitious in setting the deadline of December 13. I think it's good to have the broadcasters chase a target, but everyone I'm speaking into the industry suggests that the December 2013 deadline is completely unrealistic for digital migration.
I think the minister is also a little bit concerned about the tight deadline. When we spoke yesterday, he did mention that everything's on track to release the set-top box manufacturing strategy by June. But he says he would like to have seen things move a bit quicker since he is very cognizant of the deadline.
Mm. I had a great chat with Richard Waghorn, who's the Chief Technology Officer at the SABC this week, and he said to me that assuming that the policy is in place around set-top box manufacturing, we should see the first decoders and set-top boxes and the first commercial DTT services arrive in South Africa in about a year, just over a year, second quarter of next year. But again, it all relies on a chain of processes that has to happen, one of them being the set-top box manufacturing strategy.
The other being the subsidization strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a whole lot of them. They've got to come up with a conditional access system. They've got to come up with there's a long list, long chain of things. But sometime next year, hopefully, we'll see the launch of commercial digital TV.
Should be fun.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, although people with DSTV like you and me don't really need digital TV. Well, although there might be some new content options available.
With the increased cost of DSTV, if I could go to terrestrial Mnet alone and have a couple of channels, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
As long as they were series. I like series channel.
Right. Anyway, I think we need to take a break there. We'll be back right after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like taxis and rush hour.
Ah!
But we do give a hoot. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. So Candace, Microsoft announced its big BE equivalence deal, as they're calling it, this week.
Yes.
A 475 million rand total empowerment deal, which is seeing them invest in small and medium black-owned enterprises. They've announced four companies that are to receive the investment under the plan. They haven't said exactly how much they're going to receive, although they have indicated that they're planning to invest over a period of 7 years, 4% of Microsoft South Africa's annual turnover.
It's quite a change from the original agreement, which was originally announced by Microsoft when planning this BEE deal. They were going to give 25% of the actual company's value and market value. And now they've decided to do 4% of the annual turnover.
Okay. But it's an interesting approach. The challenge that Microsoft has is that under US rules, SEC rules, I think they are, they can't sell equity in their local operating subsidiaries. So they, unlike many of the European companies, especially the German companies, which have done equity deals, selling shareholding in the local operation, Microsoft and other US companies say that they are precluded under US rules from doing this. So they've Microsoft has come up with this equity equivalence deal, which will see them invest in small black technology companies, specifically software developers who work around Microsoft technology. So they've announced four companies, a company in Cape Town called Maxor, a Durban-based company called Homegrown Integrations, Peter Maritzburg-based company called ChiliSoft, and then a Johannesburg company called Homegrown Integrations. It's a company called BUI from Johannesburg. And they've got plans to announce at least another one later this year, and possibly up to another six. Mteto Nyati, who's the managing director of Microsoft South Africa, says that they won't do more than 10 investments because that's the maximum they feel that they can manage and look after. But it's a really interesting approach to empowerment, and probably a much more healthy way of approaching it than doing equity deals with the usual BE suspects and the guys like Cyril Ramaphosa and the usual names who keep getting richer through these BE deals. This is actually putting money on the ground into startups and into small black business. So I think it's a much healthier approach to approaching empowerment.
Agreed. But I mean, these four companies actually are quite interesting. They come from various fields. There's one of them deals primarily in security, mobile security. Another one deals primarily in mobile content. And there are a couple of really interesting markets that they're tackling. But what I really find interesting about this is that basically Microsoft hasn't announced the amount that they're investing, because for the first year, the target is to develop a proper business plan for these four businesses. And each company will get basically a Microsoft executive that will work there as a mentor and help these four companies develop this business plan. Come the end of the year, the business plans will be presented, and then depending on what the plan is, Microsoft will then start the investment. Obviously, there will be, given money to operate for the time being, but I think it's really great. And when I spoke to Mteto Nyati about it, he was saying to me that the reason these guys were chosen was because they weren't keen to just get money and run. They don't just want an investment. They want to grow their businesses. They want to have the business plan. They want to have the investment go towards something that's sustainable. And that's why these businesses were chosen. So I think I agree with you. I think what an incredible way to start BEE investment in this country.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And the DTI, which Microsoft's been working with quite closely on this, I think they've been having a few disagreements as well about exactly how the process will work and what government's involvement should be. But the DTI, the acting director general, was speaking there, but also one of the officials from the DTI made some really interesting comments during the question and answer period at the press conference, in which he said the DTI is very excited about this model because they believe that, and I'm just reading here, that it can generate as much as 40 billion rand of investment into the country through equity equivalence deals involving multinational corporations that operate in South Africa. So they're talking very bullishly. I mean, that 40 billion rand certainly sounds like a stretch target to me, but in my view, this would have much more positive benefits for the country and for skills development and for job creation and for just general economic growth than the type of BE deals we've seen historically.
Absolutely. And this kind of investment could really raise the caliber of South African technology. I mean, you look at international companies and some of the big names now, all they needed to start up was a little bit of confidence, a little bit of courage, and a little bit of someone to show them what a consumer or customer face looks like and how to approach that. It's so incredible to see that, and it will be incredible to see how these companies pan out and might actually make a nice case study for someone.
Absolutely. I've got no doubt that some of these companies aren't going to become the global multinationals that Microsoft is hoping them to become. In fact, maybe even only one or two of them will even start to explore the international stage.
But one South African Facebook, thank you very much. That's a massive company. That's massive growth. That's massive job creation. And changing the face of South African technology in terms of who has ownership of the technology sector. And I think the more BE empowerment we have in the sector, the better.
Yes. So Candice, Nokia kindly sent us their new high-end business smartphone, the Nokia E7, to play around with this week. I was at the launch last week and now having a proper couple of days to really play with the device. And I must say, I'm really, really impressed with the hardware. It's got a fantastic 4-inch AMOLED touchscreen display, full comfortable keyboard that flips out, really beautifully designed piece of hardware.
It's quite slick.
And it really shows you that Nokia, despite all the negativity around the company, still can produce great hardware. But
the inevitable,
it's running Symbian 3, and next to Android, next to iOS, oh my God, it's all I can say is I'm getting back onto my Android phone pretty soon. Nokia really has fallen behind with their operating system software, and they've admitted it as much. I mean, their CEO Stephen Elop compared it to Nokia to being on a burning platform with their operating platform. As far as I'm concerned, Windows Phone 7 can't come soon enough to Nokia devices. I've played around. I don't know if you've had a chance, but I've played around with a couple of Windows Phone 7 handsets so far. It still needs a little bit of work, but it's actually a really great software platform. It's a massive improvement on what Microsoft had before, and in my view, is quite a serious competitor to Android and to iOS. So, Nokia, great hardware. Pity about the software. Windows Phone 7 can't come soon enough to the Nokia platform.
I've played around with Windows Phone 7, and there are a couple of bugs and a couple of tweaks that they need to make, but I agree with you. I think that they finally have come to the party in terms of mobile OS competition, and they really needed this. And I think that this Nokia Microsoft partnership will be a good one when Nokia and Microsoft get down to actually producing phones with Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, I mean, they're only talking end of this year or early next year for the first Windows Phone 7-based smartphones to come out. I wonder why it's actually taking so long, because there's going to be this long period now between now and the end of the year where consumers are going to sit and say, well, you know, Stephen Elop, the CEO of Nokia, said we're standing on a burning platform and accused Symbian of being most of the problem, but we're going to have to wait 9 months for a Windows Phone 7 based Nokia device. What do we do in the meantime? I'm due for an upgrade. Maybe I shouldn't try Nokia. Maybe I should try something else. It's a big challenge for them. They're going to have to convince customers, particularly tech savvy customers, that they shouldn't try alternatives. And the problem is, once you try an alternative, your chances of going back, if you've had a bad experience with an operating platform like Symbian, is probably quite low, even if Nokia then brings out great Windows Phone 7 products.
Well, unless they play the marketing right in that space. And let's face it, this industry is more about marketing than anything else.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a big challenge for them, and they're going to have to manage the transition very carefully, I think.
I think they will, but I also think that they're not really on as much of a back foot as many people think. I think that the market churn in the handset space is so fast and so quick. You know, today's technology is gone tomorrow. So
that's true.
That, you know, if it comes out next year and comes out with some serious differentiator, then awesome, then they're fine.
And of course, I think we've mentioned this before, but the real opportunity, I think, is in the mass market. And
yes.
If Nokia can be successful in pushing Windows Phone 7 down the value chain and into that mass market, which, let's be frank, Nokia still dominates.
Absolutely.
Then I think they've got a real shot at success.
I think so too.
But yeah,
but they have to get rid of Symbian.
Probably going to be more of a 2012 story than a 2011 story.
Indeed.
I think they've really committed to getting rid of Symbian once they move to Windows Phone 7. Certainly on the smartphone platforms.
I haven't heard anything, but Symbian in the low end handsets, it's been a good run for it.
Yeah, and for feature phones, I think Symbian's still fine. I mean, I've got a whole pile of old Nokia. I mean, I was a Nokia user for years, and I've got a whole pile of old Nokia phones in my sock drawer. Haul them out occasionally and use them, and hand them on to people who need to borrow phones and that sort of thing. And playing around with those old phones, I mean, they didn't do much. You could make a phone call and send an SMS and maybe one or two other things, but for what they were, they're great, great handsets.
Yeah.
It's really at the top end of the market where Nokia has fallen down, and it started with the iPhone, and they just didn't know how to respond to it. They brought out things, you know, a whole range of devices, which all based on Symbian, which really went up to scratch. But anyway, almost out of time, Candice. As we mentioned earlier in the show, we're off a bit later to the big Vodacom rebranding and restructuring announcement, which is happening later this afternoon. You've seen the new logo and new branding. What do you make of it?
I think it looks pretty good. It looks like Vodafone.
It does look like Vodafone, yeah. And I think it stands out a lot more than the Vodacom logo.
Well, I think that there's a reason that Coke uses red, black, and white.
Mm.
And it's because it's such a dominant, it creates such dominant imagery in your brain.
Mm.
And I think that that red is good for Vodacom. And it's long overdue for a refresh.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah, I mean, I quite like it. That shop with the picture of the Vodacom store in Fourways Mall, which we published on Tech Central a couple of days ago, it looks very professional, very what's the word? Very European in a way. It's something you'd imagine to see on a high street walking through.
Yes, it's very clean. Yeah. It's something that you could put next door to the likes of Harrods and feel okay about it.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. No, yeah, I agree with you.
But I do like it. Clean. I think they've done a good job on the rebrand. And, well, you know, probably they didn't have to do a lot of work in terms of thinking about it because they simply just took Vodafone's brand to a large extent. I think it works well, and I like the font they're using in the Vodacom name, and the use of the teardrop. I don't know if Vodafone actually calls it the teardrop.
I don't know.
We call it the teardrop. It looks like a hurricane, half a hurricane symbol from a weather chart.
An upside down, back to front comma, upside down, inverted comma.
Yes.
All sorts of things.
Yeah, Nike's got that tick. They've got that teardrop. What do they call it? The Nike swoosh, I think.
The swoosh, yeah. But swoosh, I just call it the tick because that's what it looks like.
The teardrop, yeah. Anyway, cool. That's all we have time for this week. Reminder, the Tech Central Pub Quiz is coming up quite soon. We are now fully subscribed, I'm afraid. So if you hadn't got in, I'm afraid it's too late. But the pub quiz, for those who are coming, is on the 12th of April. Tuesday, and happening at the Baron on Main Road in Bryanston. So we're looking forward to seeing you there. Aki Anastasiou has quite kindly agreed to be the quiz master for the evening, and we've finalized our questions. We've got some toughies, a couple of easy ones as well, but most of them are pretty tough.
They are pretty tough.
But we know our readers are smart people as well, so I've got no doubt you guys are going to get a lot of the questions right.
I reckon.
Great. Candice, let's call it there.
Indeed.
We'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Ciao.